find a costume. Do you have them lying around the house or something?
No, I reply quietly. It was in the attic, with my parents' stuff. Slowly, as the words sink in, her eyes widen. She sets down her magazine, shaking her head.
Oh, my God.
It's your mom's, isn't it? I mean, my throat begins to close. I don't want to talk about mom's dress. The yards of night sky sewn into the hems. It hurts in a place I haven't felt in 8 years. Like a sore muscle I'd forgotten existed.
Seriously? She says when I don't debunk her question. They're using your mom's cosplay? That's messed up. Why don't you do anything?
What can I do, Sage? I argue. If I go to Catherine, then they'll destroy it. And they can't know that I'm entering the contest, too, or they'll tell Catherine and I won't be able to go. I can't win with them. I can never win.
But you can't just let them.
I'm not. We're entering. That's how I'll stop them. She purses her lips.
All right, fine. We'll swing by and then head over to my house.
Dog! Stop panting so loudly.
Ugh, it's slobbering everywhere.
The edges of my lips quirk up at the scowl on her face.
It just means he loves you.
Mm-hmm. She gives Frank the evil eye and goes back to her magazine. To anyone who's never been in my house, it can be a little jarring. Most houses in historic Charleston are beautiful, elegant. They think of the ones on Rainbow Row that are painted in the pastels of the season, lining the Battery like marching pinafores. But my house is on the edge of the historical district, and though it's old, it's too young to qualify as historical and too old to be torn down. So it sort of exists in this limbo, with a leaky roof and a creaky front door. I push open the door and hurry up the stairs. Sage marvels at the foyer, the immaculate wood finish, the chandelier, and the spotless living room. At least, that's what the twins' friends look at when they first invite them over. They're all astonished that everything is so tidy, so white, so...
It's all so soulless,
comes Sage's voice as she follows me up the stairs. I try to think of the best place to hide the con passes. Underwear drawer? No. I've already stashed the bus tickets and cash in there. Catherine likes things clean. She wanders down the hallway, with Frank tucked under her arm like a furry football. If Catherine knew that a dog was in her tidy little home, she'd flip. That gives me a mote of satisfaction. She doesn't know everything. She can't control everything. Sage studies the family portraits of Catherine and the twins, lingering a little longer on the ones showing the twins as kids. She cocks her head.
Where are you?
I wasn't in those, I reply, glancing around my room. Under the mattress? No. Who knows what's under that?
Hey, is this the twins' room? With the two beds?
Yeah. I twirl around my room, searching, searching, until my eyes settle on the framed blueprints of the Prospero. Bingo! I take the frame off the wall and tuck the con passes against the back of it.
Hey, Frank needs to take a leak, so I think I'm heading out.
I'll be out in a minute.
Don't hurry.
I shake the frame to make sure the passes won't fall out, and then hang it back on the wall. There's no way they'll find them there. I wouldn't find them there. I close the door to my room and hurry through the hallway and down the stairs. I lock up just as Sage comes out from the back of the truck, wiping her hands on her pants. Did Frank do his deed? I ask, rounding to the passenger side.
Right on your stepmom's petunias,
as I'd hoped. She hops into the driver's seat and cranks it up. The engine rumbles to life.
You know, he's not so bad.
Told you he'd grow on you. She adjusts the rearview mirror.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
I give her a strange look as she pulls out of the driveway and starts off toward her house in North Charleston.
Are you okay? Fine, I'm fine, but...
She adds after a minute.
I do have a question.
Those things on Carmendor's jacket? Those two things? She motions to her sleeve, and I know exactly what she's talking about. The Federation badges that say what class and what genetic modification you are. Star wings.
Your jacket doesn't have them. And you don't have the crown either.
Yeah, those were missing from the trunk.
Can we get them online?
The star wings, maybe. But the crown? I shrug, trying to remember how much one goes for on Etsy. Is the price of a small child.
Well, my firstborn's already taken by the Dark Lord. So how about we just make one instead?
Make it? I think she's joking until I realize that I'm the only one laughing. I clear my throat.
No, I don't think so.
She drives around a slow economy car jostling onto the freeway.
Oh, come on! I'm sewing your jacket back together. I can work miracles.
Can you ask on one of your forums or whatever?
Fandoms have forums, right?
Yeah, we have forums. She raises a dark, pierced eyebrow.
I can try, I finally cave.
She punches me good-humoredly in the shoulder, making the truck swerve.
I knew you could do it! Hey, eyes on the road!
Grinning, she turns back to the wheel. I feel for my phone, even though I know car is working. He'll be at the con too, won't he?
He'd been trying to cancel something, but maybe he never got through.
Would there be a chance of us meeting? Would he even want to meet me? I chew on my bottom lip, nervous. What if he comes to his senses once he sees me? Takes one look and runs for the closest to Mara for support. What if we meet, he doesn't like the real me? It's easier to be who you want to be when you aren't trying to be who everyone else thinks you are. But why do I care? I hate that I care. I hate that I think about Carr, when I should be focused on nothing but winning the contest. I hate that I'm falling for someone I don't even know.
Darian. With the solar flux capacitor breaching critical mass, I do... Shit. Calvin, you see, shoves away from me, shark teeth glinting. What's my line again? I beat his PA to it, and intone, with the solar flux capacitor breaching critical mass, I don't see any other way, Your Highness. Calvin glares at me. I didn't ask you. What do you want, extra credit for knowing my lines too? I shrug and adjust my collar as he composes himself. The ADR shakes her head, muttering something to the director. Eamon nods, checking his watch before he signals to her again. All right, we'll take an hour. Dinner break, the ADR shouts at the crew. And we got barbecue catering tonight. Cal, can you run your lines while you're at dinner? Yeah, he mutters and hops off the stage. It's unreal how fast the techs and assistants drop their work and make a beeline for the exit. I sigh, sinking down to the edge of the fake bridge, unbuttoning my jacket collar. The set empties out faster than bleachers during halftime at a high school football game. A PA comes to take my jacket, but I tell her I can do it myself. She's older, college age, probably interning for cheap or no pay. She thumbs back to the door. Are you coming to eat at least? I give her a thankful smile. Yeah, I'll be there in a few. When she's gone, I reach into my jacket and fish out my phone. I'm getting better at hiding it. Not texting as often. Doing it on breaks when no one's watching. It sucks, and I feel like a jerk for not answering L quickly. But at least I answer eventually. L, 3:02 p.m. Day 2 of Frank the Tank at work is amazing. He's such a ham. One attachment. L, 4:21 p.m. I think tonight I'll introduce my friend to the Amara Epps. Let her cry it out. Although I'm not sure if she cries. I mean, I'm going to cry. Maybe she's the crying because other people cry type. L, 6:32 p.m. Do you ever wonder what would have happened if she had never saved his ass? I smirk, because I know the exact answer to that. 7:43 p.m. He probably would have died. Also, hi, smiley face. Sorry for not replying sooner. Got in trouble for texting at work. Sad face. Oh, look, it's the Ice King doing what he does best, being antisocial. The sound of Jess's voice makes me jump. I shove my phone into my jacket and spin around to face her. She's changed out of her costume, back into yoga pants and a tank top, her dark hair pulled into a ponytail. In her hands are two plates of barbecue. I lift a brow. One of those for me? She chuckles, sitting down beside me. I only share with social people. I'm social enough. You totally aren't, dude. She hands me a plate anyway. How are you supposed to work the crowd if you're sitting over in a corner texting all day? It's not my job, I argue, taking the plate. It smells delicious. Oh, and look, she remembered not to put bread or any sort of carbs on my plate. Only protein and greens. I swear if I can just have one piece of bread, I'll never lie about my texting habits again. And genius sells itself anyway. Jess gives me a look. Watch out, your ego's showing. It ain't easy being me. She swings her legs back and forth, looking out over the soundstage. My agent's in talks with this indie project, she says after a moment. Oh, yeah? I say through a full mouth. What's it about? This small-town girl who lives a double life as a DJ. I read the script and it's good. It's really good. And I'd be so good in it.
You have the talent. I swallow my food. I mean, no one can run in heels like you can.
Want me to stab you with one? She threatens. I raise my hands in surrender. It's a good project. Small, but cool, you know? And I'm a perfect fit for the lead. But she doesn't sound happy about it. I study her for a moment.
Then what's wrong?
Starfield, she says simply. I'm not following. She exhales slowly. Starfield's the matter. It's got this huge following. Fans are coming out of the woodwork. Those star gunners. If they rally around this movie, pay attention to it, make it a success.
Realization dawns. If there are Starfield sequels, you can't do that role.
It'd conflict with my contract, she sighs. I'm already 22, Darian. And a woman. I know you love this, but my expiration date's coming a little faster than yours. I can't waste another 3 years being a space princess. Space princesses don't win Oscars.
Morosely, she picks at her food, separating the green beans from the barbecue, her lips curved into a frown.
So much for a springboard. Maybe I should just hope it bombs. Oh, jeez. She gasps and looks over at me with wide, apologetic eyes. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean that. It was word vomit. I know this is your dream role. I'm so sorry. I suck.
It's okay. I tilt my head up, staring at the dimming orange lights on the set. When I was younger, I never fit in anywhere. I always felt like that puzzle piece, no one knew where to fit it. And then I found Starfield and its fandom, and Brian. And I thought for the first time, hey, Carmendor's like me. And now I get to be Carmendor. But what if I'm not cut out to be him after all? What if it does bomb? What if it bombs because of me? You might not have anything to worry about.
Seriously? If the screaming banshees outside the lot every day don't tell you anything.
Not them, I interrupt quickly, frustrated.
The true fans, like you said, they're coming out of the woodwork, and I don't think they like me much.
Jess cocks her head.
You like Batman, right?
I shrug. I'm a fan. She eats a small bit of barbecue, chewing slowly.
That's how she eats, I've realized.
She savors little pieces, eating bit by bit, like a bird. So, who do you like better, Val Kilmer or Christian Bale? I scoff. No one in their right mind likes Val Kil. She makes a buzzer sound with her mouth. Does that mean you aren't a true fan? What? If you like one Batman over another, which Batman does a true fan like? I realize what she means. I guess it depends on the fan. Jess nods. As actors, all we can do is put ourselves in another person for a while and play them the best we can. We're instruments. We read the notes on the page and interpret them. She fashions a violin out of thin air and begins to play a slow, moving song. Her eyes closed so delicately, I wonder if in another life she once played the instrument. I thought you didn't care, I tease. Since it's not an Oscar movie. She pauses mid-note and drops her invisible violin. I don't. But, like I said, we're an orchestra. And if you're out of tune, you'll make me look bad, too. But she can't meet my gaze. Admit it. You like being Amara. She mock gasps. Never! Jessica, an assistant calls from the exit, her voice echoing in the now empty warehouse. Phone call! Jess hops off the set so quickly she must have been expecting the call. For the fans, right? She says, and hurries out of the lot, grabbing the cell phone from her assistant's hand as she goes. I flip out my own phone, remembering blog posts on Rebel Gunner. All the scathing comments online. Jess paints a pretty picture of an orchestra, but if we are one, then I'm the first chair violinist who's been doused in gasoline and handed a match by the fans to watch me play while going up in flames. I have a bunch of new messages, all from L. L, 7:47 p.m. Oh no, did I get you in trouble? I'm sorry. I won't text you as much anymore. Promise sworn. But then there are fans like Elle. People like Elle. Even if she ends up not liking my version of Carmendor, I'm going to give it my all. Because somehow, she makes me want to be better. She makes me want to play my heart out while I'm on fire. Play and play until I burn up like a dying red giant. 7:49 p.m. Psh, let them riot. I'd rather you promise swear that you'll never stop. L, 7:50 p.m. Really? 7:50 p.m. Really. I like talking to you. L, 7:51 p.m. Why? 10 minutes, someone calls, and I jump. My hands are actually shaking a little on my phone, dying to type all the things I'm thinking. Before I can stop myself, I start to type. 7:52 p.m. Because I can't stop thinking about you. But that's crazy, right? Because we don't know each other. But I feel like I want to know you. I'm just making a fool out of myself, aren't I? Darian? It's Eamon. Where is that kid? Here. I jump to my feet. Coming. But before I go, I sneak one last look at my phone. L. 7:53 p.m. I want to know you too, Carr. I wish you were here. For real. A knot swells in my throat. Because I wish I was there too. For real. But there are 100,000 reasons why it would never work. Why it could never work. Hey, hero! My stunt coordinator hollers from the other end of the soundstage, holding up a harness. I put my phone into a pocket inside Carmendor's jacket, trying to figure out how to tell Elle that if she ever met me, she wouldn't like who she saw. It's another 2 hours before I'm free. And by free, I mean out in Olympic Park, running laps. Because apparently when you're a movie star, even when you're not working, you're working. Lonnie grunts behind me. You okay?
Yeah, why wouldn't I be? Besides the fact that my heart won't stop pounding, and it's got nothing to do with exercise. Even though Olympic Park is in the heart of Atlanta, the world is mute. The park's supposed to be closed at night, but when the night guard recognized me, he let me slip the fence. Perks to having a recognizable face, I suppose. Or having a gigantic bodyguard. Only me, my breath pumping in and out of my lungs, and my feet thumping against the pavement. Enough to make everything feel clear and sharp. Enough to make me want to tell Elle the truth. That I wish I were with her, too. But in no universe can that ever happen, can it? All I can do is be there the only way I know how. And it'll never be enough. It's been over 2 hours since her last text. She's probably pissed that I haven't texted her back. Or she's asleep. Or both. But still, I have to try. 10:45 p.m. I have an idea. Let's play I Spy. With a whoosh of speed, my bodyguard passes me. What the...
Too slow,
Lonnie throws over his shoulder, pulling ahead of me around the track. The one part of my fitness regimen I actually enjoy doing, running, is the one thing I can't do alone anymore. I'm surprised I can still pee alone, honestly. Soon, Lonnie'll probably start tailing me to the urinal. Still no text. I type another message. 10:46 p.m. I'll start. I spy something big. Please answer. I all but beg. After a moment, the typing notification appears beside her name and sends through a message with a soft ding. L, 10:46 p.m. Inside or outside? 10:46 p.m. Outside. I don't have to glance up to know it's a clear night. The streetlights don't even need to be on. It's so bright out here. In fact, I can see my bodyguard's shadow rounding up behind me. This feels like the scene from that superhero movie with a certain dude with a shield.
On your
left, I deadpan as he passes.
Show off.
L, 10:59 p.m. I don't know. A cloud? This is impossible. How am I supposed to guess if I'm not there to see, Carr? 10:59 p.m. Tisk, tisk. Patience. You don't always have to be where I am to see the same thing, young Padawan.
You're smiling,
Lonnie says as he passes me again. I wave my hand after him. Ah, oh, go on. Keep lapping me. L, 11:01 p.m. I still don't get it. 11:04 p.m. I'll give you a hint. Look up. When was the last time you did? I look up, thinking that maybe she is too. Stars and stars as far as the eye can see. The inky blackness is so dark it looks purple, bejeweled with abandoned bits of glitter. So many stars, white hot, flaring, burning like candles in the night sky. I spy... L, 11:09 p.m. Is it the sky? 11:09 p.m. Not just the sky. It's the same sky. And if we're both looking up at the same sky, how far apart can we really be? What were the odds of us being put on the same slab of rock in this huge universe?
On your left,
my bodyguard shouts again, skirting around me.
Looks like you only got two speeds, slow and slower.
I glare after him. Excuse me? Lonnie spins around and begins jogging backward.
Prove me wrong, pretty boy.
That is it. He has followed me. He has towered over me with that serious, terrifyingly calm face of his. He's been a quiet, stalking, weeping angel for as long as he's been around. But Hades'll freeze over before I let him throw shade like that.
I shove my phone into my jogging shorts pocket, then take off after him. He begins to pick up speed. We round the first corner, legs pumping. I gain on him, one stride at a time, my heart hammering in my throat. On your left, I shout, sprinting past him to the finish line. We slow down and double over, putting our hands on our knees. I suck in a painful breath, chest aching. I think I pulled my ego running. I win, I wheeze. Lonnie begins to laugh, and once I realize how silly it all is, I begin to laugh too. And then I wince, ribs hurting. There you go, boss, he says after a moment, righting himself. You're never going to pull ahead unless you really go for it. He gives his arms a shake, rolling his head to and fro, stretching his massive shoulders. I take the opportunity to pull out my phone. Still no answer. Maybe Lonnie's right. I need to really go for it. 11:09 p.m. L, we might not know much about each other, and I might not be there, and you might not be here. But I'm glad to share this sky with you. Maybe we should start looking up together, Oblena.
L. Oblena. My heart. The words that Carmendor says to Amara in the last episode. The episode when she... When the Black Nebula... I hold the phone in my chest and stare out my bedroom window, up and up at the clear and cloudless sky. We aren't alone, I say quietly, liking how the words fit around my lips. If this is the impossible universe, then I hope tonight was the good sort of impossible. I want to believe. Battery Park is already teeming with tourists and horse-drawn carriage tours by the time I race to the truck. Sage doesn't even glance up when I come in, wiping her paring knife on her apron. Today her hair's pulled back with a polka-dotted bandana, her lips a dark, deep purple-black. I began to think your stepmom actually cut you up into her salad, she says. It's only a matter of time, I reply, dumping my bag in the corner of the truck and grabbing my apron from my peg. I tie it around my waist and pull my hair into a magic pumpkin cap. So, my friends online say that you can make the crown and badges with something called Wonderflex.
Wonderflex?
Yeah, and we need a heat gun or a hairdryer.
I figured as much.
Sage gives a grim nod. Beside her, Frank the Tank sits happily on his little mat on the counter, wagging his tail at all the tourists. A little kid comes up and pets him under the chin, and he gives her a big lick. She runs away screaming. Sage just keeps chopping. I retie my apron, bunching it into knots. Or we could skip the crown. I mean, people take cosplay super seriously. They've been doing this for years, and we're what? Sage stops chopping and puts her hands on her hips.
Rookies?
Because last I heard, Carmendor was a total rookie before he survived the Brink's devastation. You can't compare a cosplay competition to the destruction of an entire colony. She rolls her eyes, pulling the plastic gloves higher on her hands.
Look, don't you want to win?
I hesitate, scrubbing Franco behind the ears. We'll be posers.
Why, because we're new? So everyone who tries something for the first time's a poser? Come on, Elle, that's crazy.
But what if... I bite my cheek as I dump a batch of fritters into the fryer beside the sweet potato fries. They hiss and spit like vipers.
What if we are posers? Impossible. You're the most Starfield person I know, Sage says. And besides, you're allowed to try new things, Elle. You're allowed to test the waters. Don't you want to try?
Try. I want to try a lot of things. I want to go to the convention. I want to cosplay. I want to pretend that I have some modicum of courage in me, like Carmendor. What if Carr is at the convention? What if he's in the competition, too? And then I realize I'm not thinking about cosplay anymore.
Well then, what do you want?
I half shrug, half wince. I want something I don't think I can have.
Like what?
Maybe we should start looking up together, Ablena. I don't know how to answer, so I just shrug, shaking the fries to loosen them out of the basket. I don't want to talk about it.
Sage shrugs and flaps a tired hand at me. Fine, whatever.
Chopping done, she pulls out the costume from underneath the counter, along with a pincushion and thread that matches the deep blue of Carmendor's jacket, and threads the string through the needle.
It's that guy, isn't it? The one you're texting.
I don't want to talk about it, I repeat.
You never want to talk about anything, she says. Come on, if you can't talk to me, who can you talk to? Why can't you just confide in me? Just rant. Tell me things.
I clench my phone.
Am I not a good enough fan or something? She asks,
throwing the jacket onto the counter.
Is that what this is about? Do I not meet your fangirl expectations? Why won't you just let me be your friend? Because it won't change anything,
I say, whirling around to her.
It won't change anything if I complain. If I tell you what I want, if I tell you that I hate my family and my life sucks and I'm falling for someone I don't even know and that wish, oh, how I wish I was in any other universe, what difference would it make?
My voice is so loud, the tourists across the street turn to watch. Sage opens her mouth, closes it again, opens like a fish gobbling for water, before her eyes drift to the counter and the empty pumpkin orange dog bed.
Where's the flea bag?
What? I blink. Glance over at Franco, who isn't there. Neither is the jacket. We lean over the counter just in time to watch a fat brown wiener dog race between a family of tourists' legs, blue fabric fluttering in his wake.
I'm going to fry him, Sage cries, ripping off her apron.
She dodges past me and swings open the back doors to the truck with a running leap, calling for Franco. I don't even take off my apron as I dart after her. Franco has my costume, and who knows what he's going to do with it.
Franco!
Tourists line the streets both ways. Cars bump by on the cobblestones, horse-drawn carriages stopping frequently to marvel at rainbow-colored houses. So many people, but no Franco. How could I have let him out of my sight? We shout his name, dodging and weaving through tourists who loiter too long in front of the big houses with steepled roofs and grand verandas. They turn to stare like we're some kind of weird show. Two girls, one in an orange eat-me apron and the other in a tulle tutu and checkered ribbons, tearing down the sidewalk like the Knox are on their heels. But when we reach Rainbow Row, he's gone. My chest constricts. Oh, no. Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no.
Hey, Mutt! Flea bag! Sage adds. Roly-poly-oly! Fatso!
That's not helping, I hiss. She shrugs. He came when I called him Frank Zilla last night.
Oh! There!
She nudges her head toward a side street, and what might be Franco's chubbiness rounding the corner, at least we hope it is. How can a fat dog run so fast? She grabs my arm and pulls me into a gallop again, but she trips on a stroller, stumbling. I pull ahead and turn into the cobblestoned alley, and suddenly my worst nightmare is realized. Franco is sitting, tail wagging happily, as his ears are scratched by none other than Calliope Whittemore. And she has my dad's jacket in her grip.
Oh,
she glances up through her loosely braided hair and quickly stands.
Al. Cal, what are you?
I chance a look at my jacket, which she knows is mine.
Aren't you supposed to be at the country club for lessons?
I skip today. Sometimes I do that. Chloe doesn't tell as long as I don't tell Mom what she does behind the pool house with that linebacker from school. She pets Franco's little head. I was wondering where this little guy went, you know, when he disappeared.
Here,
I hurry over and scoop up Franco, hugging him tight, eyeing the jacket, wondering if I should go for it, too. Calliope frowns, looking hurt. I shouldn't care, but I can't get the image of her in my mom's dress out of my head, and now she has my dad's jacket? I shift from one foot to the other. Maybe I can fake her out. Toss Franco at her as a distraction. He'll come at her, claws bared, and kung fu her while I wrestle the jacket out of her grip, and then... Frank whines, wiggling in my grasp as Sage rounds into the side street beside me. Case solved, I guess, Calliope says. The buttons on the jacket glint in the sunlight. She glances over at Sage. Hi. Calliope, Sage replies for her. Cal, Elle's stepsister. Sage glances between us, and I can see the thought crossing her face. Cal really doesn't look evil or conniving, with her purple glasses and braided hair. But evil rarely looks like evil should. Hesitantly, Cal holds out the jacket to us. Is this yours, too? Sage takes it.
Yeah, mine. The mutt got away with it.
It's the jacket, isn't it? Carmendor's? Don't say a word, I say stonily. Don't say a word, Cal. Her face fractures a little. Elle, about that dress. It's fine, I force out, my voice tight. I don't want to talk about it. But it's fine. Thanks for catching him, I add, heaving Frank and Dog higher and turn to go. We should get back to work. Sage, I say when she doesn't follow me out of the alley. She hesitates for a moment, rubbing the back of her head.
It was nice meeting you,
she murmurs to Cal, then turns and follows me out. She doesn't catch up until we're halfway down Rainbow Row.
Hey, wait a second. Do you think maybe you're wrong about her?
No. She's going to tell Chloe. I know she will. Usually they're conjoined at the hip.
Maybe she isn't as bad as you think.
I snort. Yeah, and Darian Freeman can act. Which reminds me that I have to write a new blog post.
About Darian's acting skills?
His inability to stay out of trouble, I reply. He and Frank have that in common. You move your fat butt from that cushion ever again and you're going in a fritter. You hear me, Frank? A fritter!
That wouldn't be very vegan,
Sage mutters, but then she flashes a grin.
Hey! Maybe you should text that guy your blog.
Dream on! I've had that blog since practically before I knew how to spell. The very thought of Carr reading it is mortifying. Besides, he works so much. He doesn't have time to read my silly little blog.
Mm-hmm.
Sage sweeps the jacket over her shoulders to wear like a cape.
Whatever you say, Captain.
Darian. You're right. Whoever's writing those blog posts has a serious crush on you. Jess hands me back my phone as we pull into the hotel. 3 scheduled dates, i.e. us eating food in the same restaurant to the soundtrack of camera flashes, down, 1 more to go. I ease us into the carport. I think you mean has a serious vendetta against me. Jess makes a tisking sound. No one is that vicious without some feeling behind it, she says. And I think she has some fair points. I mean, it's not like she's one of those white dudes saying that you just got cast because you're not white. 1, that's ridiculous. And 2, if they even watched the show, they'd know that... Wait, how do you know it's a she? Jess arches an eyebrow. Seriously? Read it again. I'm totally right. I raise my hands and surrender. Fine. But no one should be that vicious, period. She's like a Dalek with a blacklist. Absolutely relentless. I open the passenger door for her and toss the keys to Lonnie, who's squeezing himself into the driver's seat to go park.
I wrap my arm around Jess's waist and start for the hotel lobby, paparazzi following like a swarm of bees. Between the constant barrage of flashbulbs and questions, I'd take my fans over this any day. "Are you two dating?" a paparazzo barks at us. "What's she like? How about your old co-star?" "Jess, hey Jess, what about Carla? Cheating on her now?" Jess falters a step, but I think only I can tell. "Carla? How do you feel about the other girl he's texting right under your nose?" someone else asks. I whirl around, but Jess yanks me by the arm to the end of the lobby, where they barrage us with questions at the elevator. After an eon, the doors open to reveal a strawberry blonde bouncing on her toes. Gale. Because, of course, she can sniff out trouble like a bloodhound. I corral Jess into the elevator as Lonnie catches up, pushing through the paparazzi like butter.
"Dear,"
Gale says, squeezing into the elevator with Lonnie. He towers in the corner like a great, imposing shadow.
"I've been looking everywhere for you. There's a message at the front desk."
I ignore her and turn to Jess.
"Carla?"
Jess jabs the button to her floor, staring straight ahead into the shiny brass doors. Her jaw set.
"Please don't ask. Please." "Darian!"
Gale touches my elbow. She looks agitated.
"There's this guy calling you. He keeps leaving messages with the front desk."
"A guy?" Jess asks. "What guy?" Lonnie tenses.
"Is he a security threat?"
"An ex-boyfriend?"
Jess adds.
"No, no,"
Gale says.
"It's just someone talking about the con."
The elevator doors ding open, and I make a break down the hallway before Gale can answer. Jess and Lonnie follow, but they don't keep pace. Gale, however, does. I swipe open my door with the magnetic key and faceplant onto my bed.
"Dare, I know you don't want to handle this right now, but..."
"Isn't handling things your job?" I say into my pillow.
"You know what I mean."
I roll over, staring at the popcorn ceiling. "Okay, messages. What did they say?"
"Just that..."
Gale falters, sitting down on the edge of the bed.
"Just that you should look out for him, whoever this guy is, at Excelsicon, and that you should want to talk to him."
"That's it?" I sit up.
"Gale, honestly, it's probably just this angry blogger. They've been posting for weeks about how terrible I am as Carmendor." "But how did he find the hotel?"
"Well, don't know," I admit.
"I mean, how did the fangirls find the set? These internet people are crazy. They're probably swapping location info on Tumblr right now."
"Here." I pull up Rebel Gunner on my phone.
"This is what I'm talking about. These people are pretty ruthless. Well, Jess thinks this girl has a crush on me, but..."
"Girl?" Gale looks up from the blog. "Or guy," I amend. "I mean, I don't know who writes it, but I bet you they're just some bitter fan with an axe to grind. So he'll come and tell me off. Big deal." She hands back my phone.
"So you don't think it's someone you know?"
I give her a blank look, waiting for her to clarify.
"You don't think it's Brian?"
I blink. I haven't heard that name in months. Too busy with training and the shoot and all of the tabloid stuff and... L helped me forget. "Nah, he wouldn't dare show his face around here. Besides, what would he be doing in Atlanta?"
"You're right,"
she agrees quickly and paces.
"Well, maybe it's best if you don't do the contest. You'll be right there with all those fans. Something can easily go wrong."
"Wrong?" I echo. "Like what?"
"We don't know who left those messages. It could be any crazy person. After what happened on the roof, we can beef up security. We can make sure you feel safe, and...
I'll be fine, Gail, I interrupt. I don't want to be some aloof star in this fandom.
But this is your life, Darian.
You really think I'm in danger? She throws up her hands, turning on her heels to pace the other way, but then she stops and falls with a thunk onto the bed beside me. She heaves out a long sigh.
I don't know. I should tell Mark.
No. Gail goes silent, and I study her. The way she fidgets with her hands, digging the dirt out from under her bitten fingernails. Her plaid shirt is half untucked from the waistband of her washed-out boyfriend jeans. About as put together as she normally looks, but she's missing her earrings. Purple studs. She gets scatterbrained when she's under pressure.
What if this guy really wants to hurt you, Dare?
She asks softly.
You can't be just a fan anymore.
She's right. I don't know what these people are capable of. Jess's joking about the blogger is all fun and games until one of those fans start to use more than just words to hurt me. Who knows what the guy on the roof would do if he cornered me again? Take more than just a few bad photos?
I can't take that risk. But I can't avoid the con, either.
Tell you what, G, I say, keeping my voice as steady as I can. Just double-check that I'm not doing anything one-on-one. No signings or anything. Okay? Gail nods.
Okay.
Perfect. See? Problem solved. Gail is silent for a moment and puts her head on my shoulder. And if anyone does mess with you, they have to go through Lonnie, she says. I pity the fool, I reply, trying to pretend like I'm not scared. She laughs and rolls her forehead against my shoulder. Just act like everything is okay. It's my job. I should be brilliant at it.
L. When I get to Sage's house the next night, the last night we're working together, I kick off my shoes and dump my bag at the door, just like I would at home. Sage's house is weird like that. It feels like home. I want to be back at a reasonable hour tonight, I tell her. I don't want Catherine to start getting any ideas. She rolls her eyes. You're paranoid. We'll get you home at the same time we have every night. But what if she begins to suspect something? Then I'll call and say that you were here, dear. Sage's mom emerges from the living room. All 60s goddess supreme in a tie-dye sarong and bracelets that jingle like New Age maracas. Don't you worry. I smile. I'm sorry, Miss, Winona. But she won't go for that. My stepmom just doesn't have feelings, Sage finishes for me. Or like, know how to mom. Oh, L, Sage's mom puts a hand to her chest. You know you can always come here if you need some mothering. Just ask Sage. I'm a natural. She winks. Mom! Sage groans and grabs me by the elbow. Come on, L. Let's watch that last episode and get you fitted. We don't exactly have time to waste. She's right. The contest is tomorrow. In less than 12 hours, we'll be on a bus bound for Atlanta, costume in tow. But I still drag my heels. It's because we're about to watch the episode I can't stand. It's because I'm about to relive my nightmare. Princess Amara fallen into the Black Nebula again and again in an endless time paradox. That's why episode 54 doesn't exist to me. Because it's the Styx of bad luck. It's the worst send-off to a character, the worst goodbye, because Carmendor never gets to say it. And I know better than anyone how that feels. You know, I say as we descend to the basement, I can just explain it to you. We don't have to actually watch it. No, I want to see it. I slogged through all the rest. Slogged? Slogged enthusiastically, she corrects.
I hesitate. But this one's the last one, so yeah, it's sentimental, blah, blah, blah. Sage holds out my jacket and trousers. Whatever. Come stand here. We can watch it while I make the final adjustments. Hesitantly, I press play. The episode cues up as I wiggle into the trousers, no longer embarrassed for Sage seeing me in my 3-year-old underwear with cartoon rabbits on it. We're way past that. Pants on, I climb up onto the step stool as she hands me the jacket, and gingerly I slip it on. The opening credits light up the TV. For the last time, the last episode, the last new experience. But it differs from the other intros. Instead of showing random scenes, it shows the best scenes, the climactic ones. Dad said that when it first aired, he knew it would be the last episode because of the opening credits. It looked final, he told me. You could tell. It was a send-off. Dad's send-off was quieter. Only a handful of people gathered around a small hole in the cemetery. Black umbrellas, rain, Catherine sobbing into her father's shoulder, the twins crying into each other. I stood alone, like an extra in one of those bad 90s punk music videos. Sage thinks I hate Princess Amara on the principle that she's a lying double-crosser. But I hate her because I can relate to her. I'm the one tossed into the black nebula. I'm the one lost in a life, a world, a universe that is no longer mine. The phone rings upstairs, and for a terrible moment I think it's Catherine, having sniffed out my lies, ready to ground me for good. But then Sage's mom calls down. Sagey, it's your father! Sage makes a face and goes to the bottom of the stairwell. Tell him I'll call him later. He'll be working with a client. Tell him I'm busy. Sagey, please! She rolls her eyes and glances back at me. Sorry, it's my dad person. He calls, like, once every 30 years and... Oh, Jesus. You can't even talk to your father anymore, and here I am, complaining. I put on a tight-lipped smile. I'll wait. Not like I'm going anywhere. Okay, don't move. She climbs the stairs two at a time, her clunky boots thundering against the wooden steps. When she's gone, I step off the podium and pat my clothes for my phone in a back pocket. 7:38 p.m. I have this theory, Ablen. Ablen, the masculine version of my heart. Carr responds as soon as I send it. So quick it surprises me, like he was waiting, or about to text me, or just on his phone. Probably just on his phone. Carmendor, 7:38 p.m. Theory? 7:39 p.m. Don't laugh. I've had it for a while. I have a theory that there's another universe beside ours. Carmendor, 7:39 p.m. Like those fan theories on where the Black Nebula goes? Above me, Sage shakes the dust off the rafters as she stomps from one side of the room to the other. It must be the living room. She's arguing with her dad, the kind of argument padded with years and years of well-worn I love yous squeezed between the syllables. Her voice carries down, muffled, through the air vents as I type out a text. 7:40 p.m. Yeah, where everything we thought was impossible happens. And then there's a world where everything impossible doesn't. Carmendor, 7:40 p.m.
So which universe are we in?
7:40 p.m. The first. Maybe in that other universe, I'm having those same arguments with Dad. Maybe we're arguing about where I'll go to college, or what to eat for dinner, or why Darian Freeman is the worst Carmendor known to humankind. But we'll never have those arguments. We'll never argue again. Carmendor, 7:41 p.m.
Oh, good. I was scared for a minute there, Ablena. I'm glad we're in the impossible world.
7:42 p.m. Why? Carmendor, 7:42 p.m.
because otherwise I never would have found you.
I hold the phone close to my chest, closing my eyes. Oh, but isn't that the problem? Which would I choose if I had to choose between my father and Carr? Which universe could I be happy in? The opening credits fade into the first scene. I know it too well. Amara and Carmen Dorr stand across from each other on the bridge. His face is the picture of heartbreak as he stares at the phaser in his lover's hand. You were warned about me, Ablen. Princess Amara will reply to a shocked face, but just as her mouth opens. Sage returns from her phone conversation, grabs the remote, and turns off the TV. I blink, suddenly thrown out of the moment. What was that for? Lift your arms, she says, so I do. She pinches and tugs at the fabric, seemingly satisfied. Good? Good. I think we're good. Good? I ask, dumbfounded. I begin to turn toward the mirror. Why'd you pause it? Are we done? No, not yet. No looking. She darts off to her workbench, which is covered with a white sheet. When she flips it, a gasp escapes my throat. The crown. She found a crown for me. Gingerly, like it's made of real gold, she picks it up and brings it over. I couldn't help myself, she says. It's my flaw. I'm a completionist. The outfit wouldn't have looked right without it. When I don't move, her smile begins to falter. What? Did I do something wrong? Is it the wrong crown? No, I whisper, taking the crown. It's perfect. She laughs awkwardly. Seriously, no need to get all mushy. It was nothing. To her, it might be nothing. But to me, it means the world, the universe. I want to say that. I want to thank her over and over. But my mouth isn't working the way it's supposed to because I'm trying not to cry. And I'm trying not to laugh. And I'm trying to find the right words to describe the light slowly filling me up. I can never repay her. Never in 100,000 light years. She squirms. Okay. Now quit hanging on me and put it on. I didn't slave over it just to have you look dopey-eyed at it. I pull away, laughing and crying and rubbing my eyes with the back of my hand as she places the crown on my head. A perfect fit. She grabs my hand and gently turns me to the mirror. Your Royal Federation, Prince Carmen Dorr, esteemed captain of the good ship, Prospero. It is an honor. Then she flourishes a Federation bow, promise, sworn, salute, and all. Her smile is brighter than any star in the sky. She looks proud, and when I finally shift my gaze to me, someone else stares back. A girl with dyed red hair, dark roots showing, and thick black glasses, the highest graduate at Starfield, the heir to the throne of stars, the general's daughter. Carmen Dorr. I am Carmen Dorr. A crown of stars over my brow. But something still feels off. Sage puts her hands on her hips, appraising me in the mirror. Damn, I'm good. Damn, I echo. What's wrong with me? This is beautiful. This is exactly what I wanted. I am Carmen Dorr. But how come I don't feel like I am? I brush the feeling away. It's just shock, that's all. The shock of seeing myself so different. Sage walks around me, nodding. Not bad for a wannabe fashion designer. You are a fashion designer. We grin at each other, wide and unabashed. And for a moment, I think she's about to say something. But then she averts her gaze. We even got done early. I think we can get you home by 9.
My heart sinks. Oh, yeah.
What's wrong?